Writer Richard Ellis also took a memorable boat trip through the Arctic Sea. It was the first time he saw a polar bear up close and in the wild. It's the opening story in his new book, On Thin Ice, The Changing World of the Polar Bear.
It wasn't quite at the North Pole, but it was en route to the North Pole. I was on a Russian icebreaker heading for the North Pole, and we were still for a while, and I heard an announcement. It was a Russian ship, but they made the announcement in English that we have a bear. Went out and found that there was a bear that had come very close to the ship.
What's close?
10 feet.
Must have been almost like heaven for you, because this is not like visiting a bear in the zoo, is it?
Oh, no, no. You get a sense when you see bears in the wild, even when you see them at a distance, you get a sense of the environment that this creature lives in. It's spread out endlessly, and it's endless ice. The bear lives by walking, 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 looking for something to eat, occasionally looking for a bear of the opposite gender. From horizon to horizon, it's nothing but ice. And then you see this white bear lumbering along. You realize how well adapted they have to be to this environment to be able to live in it.
Let's talk about that environment a little. You did find ice at the point where the North Pole is, and you went swimming there, didn't you?
When we finally got to the North Pole, at that point, this was 1994, at that point, not a whole lot of people had ever been to the North Pole. So it was cause for a big celebration when we got there. And now we're on about 8 or 10 feet of ice, and we've come down out of the ship, and the Russian sailors hack a hole in the ice and invite us to go swimming at the North Pole. In order to do that, we have to strip down to our skivvies, and they tie a big rope around your waist, and you jump into the water and yell a lot, and then they yank you right out again.
And wrap you up and warm you up.
With vodka, usually. That helps a lot. So that was the North Pole in 1994, and on this particular trip, we were accompanied by a group from Harvard University. And their leader was a man called Jim McCarthy, who was a climatologist and one of the ranking experts on climate change and global warming. He went back in the year 2000 on another trip to the North Pole. But when he got there in 2000, in other words, 6 years after we'd been there before, when he went back, the North Pole was open water. That was one of the first indications that something nasty was happening to the polar ice cap.
Now, this is where it becomes very important when you start talking about the bear's environment, the change in the polar ice cap.
It means the bear's environment is vanishing. It's disappearing because they, as I said, here you see them walking around on the ice. Well, they can't walk around on the ice if there is no ice.
There's a moment in Al Gore's film a few years ago that I think everybody who ever saw it remembers when I think it's an animated polar bear cub on an ice floe that's getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
As the ice disappears, polar bears take to the water. They're very good swimmers. They take to the water with the idea that if they keep swimming long enough, they'll find another ice floe, or they'll find some ice that they can come out of the water on and go hunting for seals. But if there is no ice, they can swim and swim and swim until they drown, and that's ultimately what's going to happen.
Well, one of the things that seems to me to make the case is that in your stories of man's past encounters with polar bears, it seems common for the reporter to say there were bears everywhere. None of that is likely to happen now. There aren't that many bears left.
There are probably around 22,000 polar bears left in the world. But the numbers are not increasing because they're losing their habitat. And also losing its habitat is the ringed seal. The ringed seal is the major prey item of polar bears. Ringed seals breed on the ice and only on the ice. They don't come ashore and dig a hole in the tundra. If they don't breed, the polar bears have nothing to eat. So in addition to losing their footing, they're also losing their food. And so once again, here are these bears that are reduced in number. You can't do what the old explorers did, which was sit on the deck of your old whale ship and pop a bear an hour. Bears, by the way, this is something that's a kind of footnote here. Polar bears aren't afraid of anything. There's no reason for them to have developed the predominant predator in their own environment. Nothing ever threatened a polar bear, so they would come walking into people's camps and following people's dog sleds. knowing as polar bears that there was nothing that could threaten them. And then, of course, somebody on the dog sled turned around and shot them.
So what is their status now? How serious is the issue for polar bears?
I think it's serious enough so that we are going to see the extinction of polar bears in the wild within 100 years. Everything that's going on now, and we haven't even mentioned organic poisons that are in the air and in the tissues of polar bears, which are killing them. But everything that's going on there, the melting of the ice, the disappearance of their prey animals, the fact that they have nowhere else to go, and when they go south, they find themselves, say, in Canada on the tundra, where they are very, very poorly designed to hunt, whereas their whiteness enables them to sneak up on seals on the ice. Their whiteness makes them stand out. I'll give you an example of how badly this can work against them. Within the last year or so, no fewer than 5 polar bears have managed to fetch up in Iceland. They probably came from Greenland, which is about 200 miles at its closest point from Iceland, on a floating ice floe. If the ice floe melted, they swam the rest of the way, and then they came ashore in Iceland. Despite its name, Iceland is largely made up of lava. And now you have a white bear marching around on a black background. And what did the Icelanders do? Shot him. Because they were worried that the bears were going to come into a village and start eating people, and they're very easy to see, polar bears on lava, so they shot them all.
There was a suggestion at one point that perhaps the polar bears could be relocated to the Antarctic.
It is conceivable, although a horrible idea, but it's conceivable that in a moment of desperation, somebody would pack up a bunch of polar bears and airlift them to the Antarctic. The bears would be utterly confused. Their normal prey animals would not be there. They cannot simply say, oh, a seal is a seal, I'll just go after this one. And everything about it would be wrong, not the least of which would be they'd be on land where they used to be on frozen water. And besides, the transplanting of animals to a new environment almost always works badly.
You have been, you confess, fascinated by polar bears, perhaps above all other things, for many years, though you've studied an awful lot of wildlife. Has this research into the history of bears changed your thinking about them?
I think more than any other creature that I've written about, and I've written about a lot of different marine creatures. I've written about whales and dolphins and seals and sea lions and walruses and fish of all kinds and sharks. But with polar bears, which, as you point out, I have loved since I was a child. I used to draw them. I used to collect toy polar bears and little models of polar bears and little statues of polar bears, and more than any other animal. And now, as I read my own book and look at what I've done, what people ask me then, oh, I'm terribly sorry to hear about the poor polar bears. What can we do? I don't have an answer. You can support the World Wildlife Fund. You can support some polar bear international funds, which are concerned, deeply concerned about saving polar bears. But will we be able to save them? I think not. I feel that I'm lucky enough to have seen many polar bears in the wild. I've seen a lot of them. But I grieve for my grandchildren. I don't think they will be able to know that there are wild polar bears anymore, my grandchildren. I think that they will see them. Polar bears are in zoos, and they'll have baby bears in zoos, and everybody will say how cute, how wonderful. So yes, there will be polar bears. But the sense of their being this kind of lord of the Arctic, magnificent creature prowling around the vast iciness of the North is not going to be an experience they will know about. They may be able to read about it. They may be able to watch movies. But I always felt that knowing that there's something out there was a part of me and a part of actually nature like that is a part of everybody. It's part of what it is to be alive and a human being at this time is to be sharing the planet with polar bears or lions or great white sharks or beetles or whatever. That's part of what we are. And when a piece of it is removed, it hurts.
Richard Ellis is the author of On Thin Ice, The Changing World of the Polar Bear.